You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everybody, happy Friday and welcome back into the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. On today's episode, we are going to look at the biggest piece of baseball news here on a Friday, as the Miami Marlins have a new general manager, Kim Ang, hired by the Marlins, believed to be the first female GM in all of the major men's professional sports in the United States. Big news there, and we will get into that. And then coming up after the break, we continue our countdown of the Orioles' top 10 moves that they have made in the past decade, the time spanning from January 2010 to December of 2019. We've talked about numbers 10 and 9 on the list earlier in the week, and now number 8 on the list coming up after the break. It is a Rule 5 draft selection, the only Rule 5 pick that I have on this top 10 list, and it was the pick of a current Oriole who is still on this team now, and this is the most recent move we will talk about, but a very smart move that was made by the Orioles and Dan Duquette at that time, and we'll talk about that move after the break. But first up, of course, the big news of the day. Kim Ang has been hired as the new general manager of the Miami Marlins. Ang, who actually gets this news just a couple of days before her 52nd birthday, she will now become the GM. She's the first woman and first Asian American to serve as a general manager of a Major League Baseball team. And again, it is believed that she is the first woman to serve as a GM of any of the major professional sports teams, among men's professional sports teams in the United States. And Ang has been a baseball lifer. She has been around the game a long, long time. She was an intern with the White Sox all the way back in the 80s when she graduated from the University of Chicago, and then impressed as an intern, the White Sox hired her as a full-time employee in 1991. She was a special projects analyst and then was promoted to assistant director of baseball operations in 1995. The GM then of the White Sox, Ron Schuler, promoting her to that position. When she was promoted in 95, she was the youngest person and the first woman to present a salary arbitration case in the major leagues when she was working for the Red Sox, or the White Sox, excuse me. It was the Alex Fernandez arbitration case back then. She worked in the American League offices in 1997, was the director of waivers and records approving transactions. Then in 1998, she moved on to the Yankees, and the career really took off for Ang. Brian Cashman hiring her to work for the Yankees as their assistant GM all the way back in 1998, becoming the youngest assistant GM in the major leagues at age 29, and one of just four women to ever hold that position. And she worked for the Yankees for a few years, then moved on to the Dodgers in the same position, assistant general manager, in 2001. She, in 2005, then did interview for the Dodgers GM position. It was the first GM interview she had got. Of course, Ned Coletti got that job with the Dodgers, but he kept Kim Ang around as his assistant. She interviewed later for the Mariners, Padres, Angels, Giants jobs, and then she left the Dodgers in 2011 to take a senior vice president of baseball operations for Major League Baseball role that she has been in since then, working under Joe Torre until she was finally hired in that GM role today by the Marlins. So it's been quite a career in baseball for Kim Ang. She takes over with plenty of experience. Of course, the Marlins moving on from their former GM, Michael Hill, after this season. And now for Ang, not only does she get that GM job, but she's got a very interesting squad to work with. You know, it's a Marlins team that we know is in a rebuild, but they did kind of expedite their rebuild in 2020. We know they made the postseason. They defeated the Cubs in the wild card round, making it to the NLDS here in 2020. Don Mattingly won Manager of the Year for Miami. And we know all the guys they've traded off in the past couple years. You know, the incredible outfield they had at one time of Giancarlo Stanton, Christian Yelich, and Marcelo Zuna. Of course, recently trading JT Realmuto as well. But now they have a new young core of pitchers, and you know they got to get better with the bats, but they got some guys coming through the system, and this is a good time to take over this team. You know, you're thinking for the Marlins, they probably go through another year, probably 2021 for Miami. You know, they see if they can compete again. Maybe it doesn't work out through a full season, but I think you start to think about the Marlins as a contender when 2022 comes around. So a good time for Kim Ng to take over this position. We wish her all the best and fantastic news in Major League Baseball. It does stink that it took this long until 2020 to have the first female GM in men's professional sports in the U.S., but Kim Ng surely is a deserving candidate for that position. Again, just a baseball lifer who's been around the game since the 1980s in some very high-level positions since the 90s, and she will get that spot with the Marlins, and very good news coming out of baseball today, and just another piece of good news for the Marlins, and they should be competing once again pretty shortly here. But good for Kim Ng and good for the Marlins today. A great move that they've made for their future as they try to get back into contention. But we flip things around to the Orioles now as we continue the series that we started earlier this week, looking at the Orioles' top 10 moves that they have made, the top 10 transactions of the last decade. And we started this series off back on Tuesday. We started it with a couple of honorable mentions, including signing Delmon Young, trading for Mark Reynolds, and claiming Hanser Alberto on waivers. And then we got to number 10 on the list, which was claiming Steve Pierce on waivers in September of 2012. Then if you go back to Wednesday's episode, we went to number 9 on the list. That was the Orioles signing Nate McClouth to a minor league deal in June of 2012. And now we get to number 8 on the list. We're going to talk about a Rule 5 draft pick that the Orioles made for a guy who was hurt at the time, hadn't played above single A, and somehow it still worked out pretty well for the O's. So we'll talk about number 8 on our list of the Orioles' top 10 transactions of the last decade. That's coming up after the break. Built Bar has come back even better. The protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, well, now it has even more flavors that make it taste even better than it already did. They've got new flavors like caramel brownie, lemon almond cheesecake, and carrot cake. That kind of stuff, you know, you start thinking about fall flavors, those fit right in right there for Built Bar. They've still got the 12 original flavors like peanut butter, mint brownie, toffee almond, but the bars still covered 100% in chocolate, soft and easy to chew. But they don't just taste great, they're also good for you. That's the best part about Built Bar as well. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, great for a keto diet as well. You talk about the peanut butter bar, it's got 19 grams of protein and just 180 calories while only 5 grams of sugar. This bar is delicious and good for you as well. So go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. So today we continue counting down the top 10 moves and transactions that the Orioles have made in the last decade. That spans the time from January 1st of 2010 to December 31st of 2019, kind of that last full decade. And the move we're going to talk about today, number 8 on our list, is the most recent move on this list that the Orioles have made. And it also happens to involve the only guy who is still on this current Orioles squad. And we're going to talk about number 8 on the list, December 8th of 2016, the Orioles select the outfielder Anthony Santander from Cleveland in the 2016 Rule 5 draft. And we know the Orioles have had a history in this decade with Rule 5 draft picks. You know, most notably guys like Ryan Flaherty, TJ McFarlane, and Joey Rickard all coming over and making an impact for the Orioles after they selected them and staying around for years and years after the Rule 5 draft. And those guys were impact players. You know, Ryan Flaherty was a big piece of the 2012 and 2014 playoff teams. He was, you know, starters in those games because of injury in 2014. He started at third base because the Orioles didn't have Manny Machado down the stretch because of injury, and he was the starter at third in that postseason and hit a home run in the Royals series, made the huge double play defensively to end the Tigers series. And of course, you know, a fan favorite in Flaherty, TJ McFarland, pitched in a lot of games for the Orioles. Joey Rickard played a lot of games in the outfield. But as far as talent-wise and who's the best player they've gotten from the Rule 5 draft, it has to be, at least from what we've seen so far, it has to be Anthony Santander. Now, the Orioles took him in the 2016 Rule 5 draft, and obviously the meaning of that is, you know, to keep the guy, he has to stay on your 40-man roster and stay in the big leagues or on the injured list for the entirety of the next season. And there were two big things about the selection of Santander that really made this a risky one for the Orioles. Now, of course, there's not too much risk. If he doesn't work out, you return him to his last team. You didn't really give up anything except for, you know, a 40-man roster spot for a few months. But the risk factor and the chance the Orioles took were twofold. The first thing is, most guys taken in the Rule 5 draft, not all of them, but a lot of them, have at least a little bit of experience at AA. It can be some guys who maybe, you know, spent the last month of the previous season, you know, in their call-up to AA. They got a little taste of where the best prospects are. For Anthony Santander, he had spent all of 2016 at Cleveland's High A affiliate. And at 21 years old, he had hit extremely well there in 2016. He played 128 games, over 570 plate appearances that year, hit .290 with a .368 on base percentage. He had 20 home runs and 42 doubles that season in High A. So he really hit the ball well, and that's where he stayed that entire season in 2016. So the Orioles had seen him have a lot of success, and he was available in the Rule 5 draft. But I think for Cleveland, a big thing and a big reason why they kept him off the 40-man roster is, A, they hadn't seen him in a game at least the AA level yet. So you really don't know much about him at that point. And B, he had an injury when the Orioles went and got him that year. He was dealing with a shoulder injury, and there was a big question mark about how much and if at all he would be able to play in 2017. So for Cleveland, it was almost a no-brainer to not put him on the 40-man. He wasn't going to help you in 2017, and he had never played at AA. And even though he had, you know, smashed the baseball the previous season at High A, you couldn't leave a 40-man roster spot for this guy. And I think Cleveland's thought was, because of the injury, because he's never played at AA, they probably thought that no one would take the chance on Santander. But the Orioles did, and what happened was, they got him in the Rule 5 draft, they put him on the 40-man roster, and because of that injury, he was not ready for opening day. But of course, you can either be on the active roster or be on the injured list and hold a 40-man roster spot. And that's what Santander did for the Orioles. So he was on the injured list for most of the first half of that season. Then down the stretch, the Orioles, you know, got him some rehab games. He went to Frederick for a little bit, went to Bowie for a little bit. He played in 16 minor league games and just lit it up offensively when he came back from that injury. 64 plate appearances, 5 home runs, 5 doubles, 14 RBIs, 7 walks. It was a .382 average and a .453 on base percentage in those 16 minor league games. He seemed healthy and ready to go, and the Orioles played it perfectly down the stretch that year. You know, they got him those rehab at-bats, you know, in August, and then September came around, and it was, you know, it was roster expansion time, and in late August, you know, they felt like it had been long enough where, you know, this Orioles team in 2017, they were still on the outside, but they had a chance for the postseason, at least in August. So they brought him up and said, you know what, let's see what he can do. They brought him up on August 18th, and basically the thought was, if we can keep him around for 2 weeks, the rosters then expand in September, and then, you know, it's very easy to keep him on the active roster for September with the expanded rosters. And then once you get him through 1 year in your system like that, you can do whatever you want with him going forward. So his injury kind of timed out perfectly for the Orioles, to be honest. He played in 3 games in August that year, so they had him on the roster but weren't really using him. He went 1-for-4 in his debut on August 18th against the Angels. You know, funny enough, Santander's debut, I was actually in the ballpark for Anthony Santander's major league debut on August 18th. A pretty memorable game. If you think back to that win against the Angels 9-7, that was the game where Manny Machado hit three home runs, including the walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth to beat LA that day. That game will be always remembered for what Manny did, but Santander now kind of turning into a star for the Orioles. That'll now have to be remembered as his debut, where he also got his first major league hit in that game. He started the next day, went 1-for-4 again, and then the Orioles just kind of took him out of the lineup. He was playing right field those 2 days. They took him back out of the lineup. He came into the game as a pinch hitter on August 25th in a 16-3 win against the Red Sox, and had an 0-for-1, played an inning in the field. And then he didn't play again until September, until the rosters expanded, and he was used as a pinch hitter a couple times early in September. And then the Orioles just really fell apart that year in early September, went on a long losing streak, and really found themselves out of wildcard contention. And then, you know, starting in mid-September, the O's just said, all right, let's get a look at Santander. So, you know, down the stretch for the Orioles, he started 6 games down the stretch, and they got a look at him, and he ended up going 8-for-30 at the dish in his first major league season with 3 doubles. And the Orioles at least knew somewhat what they had, but there were still question marks about him. And in 2018, you know, they kind of took a step back from what they saw. He played just 33 games at the big leagues in 2018. He hit 198 with only one home run. 48 games at AAA Norfolk, hit 259 with 5 homers. And so the question started to come, you know, would Santander work out for the Orioles? But 2019 was when he started to hit the ball, and he got more chances, obviously, because a lot of those old Orioles guys were gone after 18. The spot opened up for a 24-year-old Santander, and all of a sudden, he plays 93 games in the big leagues in 2019, hits 261, a 297 on base, 20 home runs, 20 doubles, and now you feel like, all right, we have a solid switch hitter who is going to help us, you know, offensively at the long run. He was a little above major league average at the plate. You feel like he's still developing, and he's an opening day player in 2020. And of course, we know what happened this year in 2020. 37 games, 261 average, 315 on base, 11 homers, 13 doubles. He was the team's leading home run hitter. He was fantastic all year. Unfortunately, he had that oblique injury late in the season, caused him to miss around the final 20 games of the year, didn't get a chance to play out a full season. He was on the outskirts of the AL MVP conversation when he was getting really hot midway through the 60-game season in 2020. And, you know, we hope he'll be, and he should be, fully healthy for spring training 2021. Now the question becomes, can Santander build off of that 2020 season and turn into a star that he looked like at times in 2020? Hit the ball extremely well, was arguably the Orioles' best hitter this year, and he upped his defense big time. He was known as a league average at best, a little below league average defender for his first couple years in the bigs. He became one of the better right fielders in baseball this year and was a finalist for the AL Gold Glove Award in right here in 2020. Did not win the award, but just to be a finalist was incredible for Santander. He next year will go into his age 26 season with the Orioles. He will be the opening day starting right fielder if he's healthy, and he should be. And it should be a fun time for the Orioles to see what he can do. And just what a great Rule 5 pick. You know, that's why it ends up number 8 on our list. You know, the Orioles took a big chance. He was injured. He had come off a great year, but he had never played above high A. He was injured, and a Cleveland team that has needed outfielders for the last few years, even going back to 2016, still thought it wasn't worth putting him on the 40-man roster. That was a team that had just come off from being 1 win away from winning the World Series. This was December of 2016. We're talking, you know, 5 weeks after they had lost Game 7 of the World Series to the Cubs, and knowing they needed a little more offense in that outfield, and still didn't hold on to Santander. And for the Orioles to say, you know what, he's going to be a good player, and to see that, another good move by Dan Duquette, who, you know, got a bad rap when he went out the door for the Orioles, but this was a really good move. That's why it comes in at number 8 on our list. Santander, we're hoping he becomes a star. You know, he could be a guy who the Orioles lock up here pretty soon. If he has another good season, you know, if they see a full season from Santander in 2021, that's really the only question mark left. Good in 93 games in 19, good in 37 games in 20. But neither of those things are full major league seasons. We need to see, you know, 150 games out of Santander in 2021 if we do get a full major league baseball season. And if he's still hitting then the Orioles really think about maybe locking him up for the future and being a piece that they know they'll have out there going forward as they try to get back to contention in a few years. But the Rule 5 draft pick of Anthony Santander back in 2016 comes in at number 8 on our list. So next week, we're going to continue this list. A couple of episodes coming up next week will feature moves on this list. And next up, we go to number 7 on the list. We're going to track it back to right before the Orioles were starting a season in which they would win the division. They made a move that offseason between 2013 and 2014 that at the time seemed like a really minor move, but ended up being huge for the Orioles over the next 4 years. That move will be number 7 on our list, and we'll get to it coming up next week. Also next week, we're really going to dive into this 40-man roster as the deadline approaches for the O's to kind of submit that 40-man for the Rule 5 draft and protect some of these prospects from being available in the Rule 5 draft. Guys like Yusniel Diaz, Michael Bauman, Zach Lowther do kind of seem like locks to be protected. But we'll talk about some other guys, you know, the Alex Wells and the Zach Pops of the world, the Rylan Bannons and the Cody Sedlocks. You know, some of them aren't going to be protected. Who do the Orioles choose and who could maybe be selected in the Rule 5 draft by another team? We will get to that next week. But before we go today, just want to remind everyone, you know, especially if you are in the state of Maryland like I am, the COVID-19 cases are continuing to rise. We are fully into the second surge of this virus, and it's looking like it's just as bad and in some cases worse than it was back in March and April. On Friday, today as I'm recording this, Maryland reported 1,869 new coronavirus cases on Friday. That is a new high for the state throughout the pandemic. That number never reached that high in cases in a day back in March, April, or May when things were really bad. So it is starting to ratchet up once again. So remember, wear your mask. Only go out if it's essential. And please, please stay safe, whatever you are doing, because you know the coronavirus did not go away by any stretch of the imagination. But that second surge that they talked about back in the spring that could come in the fall and winter, it is upon us. So please wear your mask. And please stay safe over these fall and winter months. But if you're staying inside and looking for something to do, you can always listen to this podcast as we will be back with you on Monday. But until then, this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.